This is the Faraway Farm Boy podcast, episode number 19. My guests today are dairy farming friends of mine from Barrons, Alberta and Nobleford, Alberta. In this episode, we talk about genomics, alley scrapers, and herd management. I have a ton of respect for these guys, and there's a lot of bull talk in this one. Please welcome Tim and Mike Hummel and Bas van der Kooi. Welcome, guys, to the podcast. We got Bas, Tim Hummel, and Mike Hummel. I'm not going to call you Matt.
I'll answer both.
So. Yeah.
Used to it. Mom calls us by both, so.
Oh, yeah. She doesn't know the difference either.
No. She named us, so she can't get it right, so.
Bas, I guess we should note that you're Ard's younger brother. The run to the family, I guess, right?
Better looking one.
Yeah, right. Yeah, for sure. And Ard was on episode number 2, I think. Something like that.
Yeah.
You got to go back and listen to that one. Learn some wisdom from that. So, tell me a bit about your farm, Bas.
Well, I farm with my dad. And we immigrated in 1996 from Holland. And then I started farming with my dad and Ard and myself. And then Ard branched off onto his own. So now it's just my dad and I farming there. And
how many cows do you milk?
We're milking 130 cows, okay. And double eight parallel.
Freestalls.
We got freestalls. And
shavings, we milk
twice a day.
Oh, yeah. I thought you guys were 3X.
Nope.
Okay.
No.
You must not like milking then. As much.
I feel like when there's only two guys, it comes down to manpower.
Yeah, and yeah. So
your dad doesn't... I would like to milk my cows 3 times a day. Yes, I would.
But your dad's not into milking, really. He's pretty...
No, he's done out of that. So
yeah.
We have one hired hand, actually, that we share with Ard.
So
he's full-time between two farms.
Yeah.
And that works out pretty good.
Yeah.
So I milk the mornings, and he does the afternoons. So that works pretty good.
And you do all your own trimming, right?
I do, yeah. I usually trim them at 100 days of milk and then dry off.
Okay.
So when they come in, they're good to go.
So they're trimmed, twice a year then, basically. Well,
yeah, on average. So I pretty much have to do one cow a day. That's kind of what it comes down to, but I don't trim every day, but.
Yeah, yeah. You ever get behind or?
Sometimes a little bit.
Like when you're silaging or whatever, all of a sudden you got like 10 to do in a day?
In the summertime, it's a little harder to do.
Huh.
And then in the springtime, I always have my clippers hooked up with the grinder. They come in so hairy, and like right now already too, I've been clipping some udders and stuff really fast.
Oh, really?
They come through there because they're so hairy, and then kind of prevents that udder rot. I find if they're not, because then the manure doesn't stick on there.
Yeah, right. What do you have for, you have alley scrapers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. We've got some Jaws alley scrapers.
How does that work? What's your main problem? Like warts or ulcers or what do you got?
Bit of everything. We have a little bit of everything. Yeah, we have Martellaro. And then we got ulcers here and there.
Oh, yeah.
But it's been a lot better lately. Yeah.
What did you change? What made it better?
I've become a better hoof trimmer.
Oh, is that right?
No, I don't know. But the run to scrapers lots. I think the scrapers did help, actually, right? Because we can run them like 7 or 8 times a day now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And you don't have it too dry or whatever?
No, we have... Our barn is really full. Right? So then...
So it works then?
Yeah.
You have no issues with the scrapers, like breaking down and stuff like that?
Not yet.
Well,
tomorrow morning.
Well kept.
Because you said it.
You guys have scrapers too, right?
Yeah, that's our biggest problem is they don't always run. So we have to, how old are they? Like 25 years old? 94, yeah.
Okay. So I think you have the ones that we used to have with the hydraulic push.
Yep. Yeah, so the biggest problem is like the bolts get wore out in we call it the lever, but it's the fulcrum that switches the...
Yeah.
Switches the direction. So then it doesn't, it gets stuck halfway and then it doesn't move. So
it goes like 3 feet back and forth,
right? No, it'll just sit there and it won't move until you kick the lever back or forward, yeah, whatever direction it needs to go. So
I used to work at a place that did that, yeah.
I know exactly what that.
Yeah, we've two like that.
What, how it gets stuck? The thing doesn't slide anymore? Yeah. Well, you need some new bolts in there.
Yeah, we just did that, but it still gets stuck. So I think we have to replace a whole bunch of the little mechanisms that flip the levers. So that's a pretty big project, but...
Is that a Ghia scraper?
Yeah.
Or a Hool.
Yeah. Hool, right, I guess, yeah. But it's sold by Ghia. But no, it works good when it works. It's just they're getting to be...
Is it because the housing rides in the track? Does that get lower too?
No, ours run on top of... ours run in the track.
Two on one?
Yeah. But I want to put another pump in. Then two alleys on each one.
You might as well say that out loud.
Oh. Yeah, so we're looking maybe put another pump in, and then we'll run two alleys on each pump. Because right now I got one pump that runs four alleys, but you can only run one alley at a time.
Oh, like hydraulic pump?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you pretty much have them running all day, right?
Yeah, and because some of them don't run, it's like you have to like restart them all day.
And then we've got, they put all the hydraulic hoses underground in a 4-inch pipe, and there's six hoses in there, and we can't, when I have a leak, which I can't find, we can't pull out the hose because it's too tight. So yeah. I've got to run hoses above. And so you run 130, 140 feet of hose.
Yeah, because they have to run along the ground, over top of the overhead doors, and then back down, and then like another 30 feet.
But you can do steel pipe too, right?
Well, you can, but I mean, when it breaks on a weekend and you got to change a hose, then I just got a 120-foot hose, and we just slapped it in there.
Oh, yeah.
And worry about it on Monday.
Yeah. Yeah, so is it worth it having scrapers, you think, or get a scraper tractor in there?
Well, scraper tractor, your cows spend too much time in the holding pen to wait while you scrape before you start milking, right? So it's...
I guess I should say what kind of parlor you guys have. You guys have a...
Pretty sure they covered that in the first one.
So, but it's a 8-8 herringbone.
So there's one guy milking.
One guy milking, and he brings the cows in, does the freestalls, and then he milks.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Dad doesn't do any of the milking anymore. He just feeds calves and runs parts and...
All the other management stuff.
Books.
Pressures you not to screw it all up.
Basically. Well, Matt and I have been running it for years already. It's just kind of, he's the mouthpiece, we're the workers. And
sure, yeah.
Slowly working it over. Somebody's got to do it. Well, it helps that he just moved out, so I'll be moving back in, so it's a little easier on Matt, because Matt's the only guy that lives at the farm, so.
Right, your brother Matt lives next door.
Yep. Yeah, on the next quarter. And then the house on the yard I'll be moving into, hopefully in February, so.
Cool, yeah. But you're saying that... you don't want to get a scraper tractor because cows are waiting too long.
Waiting too long in the holding pen then, right? Like, you know, by the time you scrape all the alleys,
right?
You know, it's going to add another 20 minutes on before you get started milking.
Yeah, that's true, right?
Yeah, you want those alleys clean.
And the way our alleys are, well, we can break out a lot of concrete, but on the end, there's elevated pads, right? So you can't just get from one side to the other. You got to actually get out of the barn and then go into the next one.
Yeah,
and then the feed alley ones, the only entrance is through the center because there's a center cross alley, so it's not even through the end. So
it's not even through the end, so it just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
So
but somewhere down the line, you're going to have to invest in new scrapers whatever. Keep going.
Upgrade them a little bit or do something.
Yeah.
Like I said, maybe put another pump in, and just two alleys on each pump.
Never ends, eh? The amount of money you can just pour into it.
Wow. We never do anything very quickly. We always do a lot of research, so and look at a whole lot of things.
That was the nice part because I got to see the scrapers working at Ard's when he built a new barn.
Oh yeah.
So I could see exactly what that all entailed, and so that convinced me.
So you guys are planning to maybe possibly add on, right?
Possibly, yeah. To mirror the barn.
Yeah. Oh, is that right? You're gonna add on to the cow barn too?
Well, eventually, yeah.
Just make it longer, or put one beside it?
Well, it's an L shape now, right? With the parlor in the front, and we double it like we'd...
Where your cows are outside in the summer.
Our barn. Right now, we're full to max capacity. So if we get any more quota increases, then we're going to have to do something.
Yeah.
We're kind of at that point
Yeah.
Where we need more milk in the tank. So. so.
Huh. And what are you guys looking at for, oh yeah, you said you're possibly going to do a robot? Maybe someday?
Oh, maybe someday. Right now our parlor is working really well, so.
We'll see.
When did you put that in, parlor?
That was 2001, so it's only 20 years old.
What did your dad start with then?
Back in the day we had kind of what you have, Justin.
Double four
pair of herringbone.
Okay.
Yeah, with the weigh jars.
Right.
Very similar to that. Yeah, it's a Surge.
Surge parlor. Yeah, I remember that.
So he came over in 96 and then bought a few cows right away, or?
I think the farm came with 45 cows. And then pretty quickly expanded to 60 and then kind of grew from there.
Huh.
Once we got more involved, right? Because I was only 10. Art was 11 or 12 when we moved here. So
right.
We were all pretty young yet.
Yeah. What are your goals as far as genetics and what's your genetic strategy on the farm?
Type and milk.
Yeah, always for the past 10 years. Doesn't ever change, or?
Well, it changes all the time, right? Because right now my 2-year-olds are probably too big, too tall. So I'm looking at it a little bit to downsize that, have a more balanced animal.
What bulls are you using to do that?
To bring them down?
Yeah, but keep the type. Because
you want to maintain type. Yeah, I know it's tough because, it's you look at the proof sheet and all the bulls I like are usually over 11 or 12 for stature, right? So then you got to kind of,
look for it. Have too big of a cow. I agree with that. So I'm going to ask you this one. How old are your heifers when they calve?
They're 2 years old in the cab, yeah.
So if you were to bump that down a month or 2 months, do you think they'd be smaller?
They would be, but they also have to be big enough when I'm breeding them. So I do agree with, like I'm saying, they're too tall and also too narrow.
Narrow, yeah.
And that's an issue, right? I don't mind it if they're tall and wide.
Yeah,
more balanced, but when they come in tall and narrow, that I have a problem with that. So, a lot of the bulls that were listed very high for type back like a couple of years ago, they were also very tall.
Very narrow.
It's still that narrow. Way. It's still that way. You have to like really, really sort it down, and it's so tough to do. But I think like stature is something like an environmental thing, not a number thing. Because an animal will grow to its environment. So like I think we have very small cows, but the classifiers always put them as big. But they're all very uniform, very much the same. And like I can have the same bull that'll produce a way different sized animal. So I think it's like health, environment, not so much genetics. But
you're saying that I'm doing a good job raising my animals?
Yes. And I'm sure like your bulk tank will agree with you.
Yeah.
Because what's your production right now?
Most of the time. I think we're at like 38 liters.
See? Yeah. So they're probably big enough. You could probably go younger, lower, like your herd management score, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing? 38 liters?
38 liters is around 4.2 fat.
Nice.
How much percent 2-year-olds?
I think we're at like 45%.
What's so your...
Quite a few still.
What's your cull rate?
I don't know that.
Would it be over a quarter, or... I'm just wondering, like...
To say for me.
That's one thing, like, I like to ask people, because, like, you can have really good averages and good numbers, let's say, but a really high cull rate, and you're breeding all sexed or whatever. Would you guys breed about half sexed, or...?
No, not half. I'd probably breed a quarter, the top... Quarter sexed, and then the bottom quarter with to beef.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of Black Angus. It's working out really well, actually.
Huh. And you do any genotyping?
I've just started doing that, actually. So I just did my second batch today. I started genotyping.
Like you did it with your bull or whatever. You kept one bull or whatever, but you do it with your average now, too.
I've been doing it with a couple batches now. Seeing that genetic potential, I still have to fully figure out how to use that properly.
Yeah.
All that information. Right? I'm not going to go, if there's one that's tests really shitty, then I'm just going to, I'm not going to breed it to beef, right, if I like the family.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Some people put more weight on those, what do you call them? Not genotyping, but...
genomic tests.
Genomic tests.
Yeah.
Than they do with cow families. They say cow families is far less reliable than...
Yeah,
well, if I guess that I'm cow just, has I'm, the genes. Like,
I'm still kind of figuring that all out, but I really like my cow families.
Yeah, what do you think?
I disagree with the numbers. Like, a cow family, if you can make it consistent, will be consistent. Like, I have a cow family right now that no matter what I put in them, they will put on a welded-on udder, like, no matter right. what. So, like, the best part about them will be the udder. They'll be small, tiny little cows, but they'll have a rockin' udder. But it doesn't matter what's in there or what I breed them to. They will always have that udder. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because it's a pretty deep family.
I wouldn't complain about that.
Maybe it's because it's red. I don't know.
Oh, yo, that's why. Yeah.
but we have this one cow, the it's the old bell ringer
cow. Is it the Armani or what?
And
that was at the show.
There is,
okay.
What has the bell ringer got? There's 30.
I have the piece in the truck, but
38 active families.
They mentioned it in the last podcast, like the influential cow families. So the one is the... is actually one of Dennis Reimer's cows, the Bellringer Mona cow. She is from, oh, I don't know, mid-80s, maybe early late 70s. But in our herd today, we have, like, almost 40 animals that go back to her.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all, like, they all milk. They all are high, like, classification. I don't...
All of them? You haven't had any one-offs that
there's,
are, like...
There's one or two off, but those ones end up out of the herd.
Really?
That are not, didn't turn up. But it's a tremendous cow.
And there's four families. There's the Rubens Mabel family. That's their biggest one. She was 87. And then there's the Megan family, and she was 88. And then the Michelle family. Dennis owns a lot of this family. She was 85, but there's a whole bunch of excellence, like daughters, granddaughters.
Hmm.
And then the...
But they'd compete with today's genomic bulls, or...?
Probably not. I mean, the one... She actually just got an injury and died. She was into her seventh lactation. She was went excellent in her fifth lactation. So, like, they aged really well, and they mature really well. And she was almost at 90,000. And, like, yeah, just a solid cow, like super strong. And there, I know Dennis has a few in that family still. I tried to buy the one off of him, but he wouldn't sell her. And then there's one other family. Well, there's two other families. One's really small in our herd. There's only like a daughter, or I guess it's a four times granddaughter or whatever of that cow.
Right.
And then there's the Monas, which is the red line. She was an excellent, and then she has like two, three very good daughters with a bunch of very good granddaughters. Like, they just constantly just produce like good, solid cows.
Who is that one that you posted about today? Is that you that runs your Marylander?
Yeah, that was me. So today would have been the two recent excellences.
I have an Instagram.
Marylander Holsteins.
Not on Instagram.
Yeah, so I posted the two excellent cows. So the one was homebred. She was, honestly, we inherited the tank from the guy before us. So I just kind of threw the dose of semen in the cow, and it's like really, really oh, that one. Is that from today?
Yep.
Oh, that's Rush. Okay, I bought that heifer myself out of the States as a 3-month-old calf. So, and then that was right at the time of that big storm in Ontario. So she spent a month in Ontario, and then I brought her in, and then a month later in May, we showed her. She was 6th in Green Acres. So she was a little small, like she was.
That's our local club?
Yeah, that's the local show. It's in Lethbridge there. And then the year later, she came back a lot bigger, a lot stronger, was reserve junior champion. So heifer, so that's the second best heifer in the show. And then this past year, because of COVID, we didn't really have a show, but we still had the Barn Cow Awards, and
that's
nice cow. Chad Kress came out and did the Futurity Award, so she won the Futurity. So she's been at the local show for 3 years. She's won 2 years, and she's just back fresh for her second lactation. She went 86, 13 days fresh. So
Wow.
There's a lot of points left in that cow. She's seven generations straight excellent back to like Roxy, so like the queen of the breed, like one of the better cows in the breed to ever come through. One.
And that's a Rush?
Her name is Rush. She's a doorman. Out of a 93-point Gold Sun, out of a 95-point elevation, I believe, out of the States. So
what are you guys looking at?
They're looking at my Instagram. So the one they're looking at right now is an excellent doorman. She's 12 generations, very good or excellent. She's out of Manitoba. We bought her at the National Convention sale.
As a calf.
As a calf, yeah, and she's kind of just aged in. Now she's in her third lactation, went 90. She's due back in April.
So you guys clip udders too, eh?
Yeah, I clipped 65 udders for a classifier in 2.5 days.
He did them all?
Yeah. And then the
ran
next...
Ran them all through the chute?
Yeah, it took me a long time.
5 hours.
Yeah. But no, we actually, this classifier...
It's good for the udder.
Yeah, I think it'll do a lot more than just... Well,
just for the classifier, I think overall, like, it's
well,
nice for an udder.
I did it for the classifier,
especially
but the one...
this time of year.
Yeah, the one thing I noticed was, like, it amplifies everything. So if you have a really good uddered cow, it looks like a really good uddered cow.
Right.
And if you have a bad udder, it... There's no hiding.
Right, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Sometimes that hair hides the fore udder.
If you know the cow family, if you know the cow, she's going to have a bad fore udder. Just leave all that so it blends. Put some hair gel on there and blend that over.
Classifiers are too good. So, no, I just clipped them all off. It'll do more clipping it off than leaving hair to blend it in. So,
yeah.
No, I'm hoping.
But you don't do the rest of the cow?
In time, I would like to, but.
They got to stay warm, too. I mean, well, you guys got insulated barn.
I got inside,
so.
But. Yeah, it's we got 140 cows I could clip, and I'm not going to clip 70 for classifier. So, no, in time, I want to start clipping them when they're fresh so that they look a little bit cleaner. But it's tough when our alley scrapers don't work all the time, so they get a little dirty. But
right, yeah.
As long as I can manage the feet, then
they're okay. All these 12 generations of very good or excellent. Why are guys doing all genomics then? They don't even have proven bulls in their herd.
I don't know. I can't answer that question because the Canadian system is based off of the true. Like, if you register, this is my belief only on this, but if you're registering and participating in Holstein Canada, the ultimate goal is master breeder. So what that requires is high scored cows that milk.
Right.
So if you just put your strict numbers on milk and production, which is technically what the actual milk system is, like we run a fat-based system obviously, right? So like you need that, but if you're registering, the whole point is to do the best you can, which is the master breeder award, which you need both. So you can't just forget about the type. Now you can get the numbers off of genomic animals, like some guys do, like it happens, but if you're not gonna participate in it and try your best to do, like, get there, then I don't know why you're doing it, really. Because you're spending you're spending a lot of money to register, but you're not really trying to get to the ultimate award, which is what you, like, in my opinion, is what you really should be doing.
I'm a long ways away from the award, so I guess.
Well, yeah, because
you get awards. That's say. The nice thing, though.
The award. But I would say that the award is, like, secondary for me. Because I just want my cows classified so that I can get more milk in the tank. Like, I can better cows and more milk.
But classifying won't get you more milk in the tank.
It'll help me breed for better, though, right? It'll help me match my cows to the better bulls.
Well, the only thing that'll get you more milk in the tank is DHI, because that'll tell you how much your cow is milking. But Holstein Canada has all these graphs and charts that show you why type leads to longevity.
Yeah.
Because the whole way master breeder is set up is, like, the higher your cow is scored, the more points she gets towards your master breeder shield.
Okay.
Production.
And the higher she, like, the longer she's in your herd, the more points she gives to you.
Yeah.
So the higher your cow scores, is like, she'll automatically give you more points. Well, if you keep that cow around for 6-7 lactations, she's going to put a ton of points towards your master breeder shield.
Yeah, yeah, but also money in your pocket. So they're kind of, the two go hand in hand.
Yeah, so... Like, there's a whole bunch of tools you can use to, like, get yourself in a position without even trying. So, like, Holston Canada sends out a report right around this time, actually, of like cows that are contributing to your master breeder shield. And mm-hmm. there'll be cows where you have absolutely zero clue why they're on there. But those are the cows that you should keep around because they're there for a reason. They scored high and they produce. So those are the cows you need to keep around. No matter what their production is, like, I believe those are the cows that you need to keep around. So
the biggest problem, though, with genomics is it's today's numbers. And when you take an older cow, like if you were to go on Compass, which is Holstein Canada's program, or any genomic program, your older cows are going to be told to be bred to beef because their genomic value is so much lower. But yet they're the ones that are putting all the daughters in your barn and giving
and
you
milk in the tank and milk and the money tank. In your pocket.
And so, you know, the guys that really focus on genomics are, I think, in the long run, miss out on longevity and the old and cow families, because the older cows, they pay their bills. It takes a cow a lactation and a half to pay for itself. And but if you keep them around for 7 lactation, they put that much more money in your pocket. So to focus only on genomic.
Well, I mean, numbers, if they're focusing on genomics and then selling heifers or whatever it is.
Right, but there again, sometimes the dam is an older cow, so therefore the number is going to be quite a bit less. So all of a sudden you're selling off what you think is a low heifer, and yet when you look at the cow family, it's like, no, maybe it's better than we think. Because it's an older bull, which numbers will be less, it's going to have a lower genomic value. I mean, the highest numbers are your youngest bulls, your youngest cows. It's going to give you your highest numbers. And if you only focus on genomic numbers, and I think, personally, in 5 years, I'm not sure what kind of animals you're going to have in your barn. It's no different. You can't always focus on type. You can't always focus strictly on milk. You need to balance, and you need to have 7 or 8 different parameters. And you need to have longevity, you need to have good udders, you need to have good feet and legs, which usually with those will result in good type.
You know, you got to view genomics as a tool, right?
As a tool. Because, it's not the only tool. It's only a small tool.
And you can't look at it as a whole. You have to break it down. So like a trait like udder depth, you'd only look at the body depth compared to that. So I don't know any offhand. I might. Pharaoh is sold by Dennis. I think he's 9 shallow for udder depth, and the body depth is 1. So the body depth, it's telling you that she's not going to be very deep, but with that, she's telling you, or the bull is telling you, that he's going to have a really, really shallow udder. So if you want to shallow up an udder like that, that's where you have to look at. And then rump angle is another one that I personally look at, and I always look at the dam score. Like, so it's kind of tough with American numbers, but if you can get a Canadian bull, I always look at her classification, because if she's going to be on the linear score 3, 4, anywhere around there, like, she's high pinned.
Mm-hmm.
So even if the bull is a 2 low, but the cow is 4 or 3, like, she's high pinned, but how is she producing a low pinned animal? So, like, that is always a little bit tricky to decipher, but you have to figure out how the family breeds, and like that's where tools like Dennis and John and CDN and Holstein Canada come into play to figure out like bulls and stuff. So I personally don't use a mating guide. I use those 4 tools. And
mating guide based on classification, you'd say? You, well, use more
like Dennis comes in here and gives you bulls, exactly, right? So I don't have any of that at our farm.
Right,
I pick all the bulls myself, I do all the mating myself. And
based on your knowledge of how those families breed back, like which, you know, if the mom's side breeds back stronger.
He knows his cow's families better than the G-mate does, right?
Well, I spent 5 years in college learning about cows and sitting through classes that I didn't need. So I had a lot of time to sit through and learn everything. And that's where I kind of like refined this, was like I sat through 80-minute lectures strictly on the internet, not paying attention to anything in class, but I still passed. So like I learned stuff, but that's kind of like, I just needed the time to refine it all. And I changed our breeding program almost 2 years ago. So we'll be seeing the first ones come in. And
what do you mean you changed it? So you change your focus or your top three?
So I used to, like, it's not a knock on Dennis or John, but, like, they would come in, yeah, this is the bull that's on special. We're pushing this bull.
Mm-hmm.
So you put him in the tank. But almost 2 years ago, I took the step back. I broke all the numbers down. And then it'd be like, okay, well, this bull will fit. So right now I don't use my range for, like, pin height is, like, three high to anything low. Because at three high, you can get a four, which won't kill you in your, like, your phenotype, but it's not great. But it'll still get you that if you make the right cross. Anything higher than that, I think you start to run into, like, high pin cows, like bad throws, like, or bad loins. And then I really changed the focus on dairy strength. I pushed a lot more strength into the herd. So bulls like Apple Crisp and Diamondback, like, I got a lot of those coming because those
are the red families.
It's not red. It's just how they breed. So those are the two bulls that I found in our herd breed strictly strength. So no matter what I put them in, I'm going to get a wider cow. I'm going to get a longer cow. Like, it doesn't matter. So, like, my best 3-year-old is a Diamondback. One of my better 2-year-olds is an Apple Crisp because they're just starting to come in. But those are the things I noticed. So those are the bulls I go back to. So I actually brought both of them back in.
Hmm.
So it's, and I don't have a wide variety of bulls in the tank. Right now I have 100 doses of, like, 6 bulls maybe.
Wow.
So I use those, and that's
where... how many bulls I run.
Do you want to list them?
Let's hear
your five.
Diamondback, Apple Crisp, there's Sex Pharaoh, I used Limited P from Blondin Sires. There's Alligator and McNutt. No, I guess there's 7 because I brought McNutt in for the Morans. And then I have a beef bull.
Yeah.
So 7.
Is that a Moran son? Is that what you said?
No, McNutt is a complete outcross.
Onto the Morans.
Yeah, because...
Oh, okay.
The one thing I noticed on CDN is anything high-typed and pulled has Morand. Well, pretty much just that has Morand in it. So what do you put on your Morands? So,
and you want to keep the pulled genetics, right? So McNutt is pulled. He's an outcross, and he's pulled. So we're gonna. Our goal is to breed the majority of the Morands are going to get bred to McNutt.
Okay, yeah. How much of your herd is pulled right now?
Oh, cows?
Cow barn's full of pulled.
Yeah, so with the breeding strategy that I do, I keep the window of each bull is very limited. So right now I have 28 calves in the calf barn and 16 are pulled. 16 are Morans.
Oh, yeah.
Everything else, so that is actually, like, pretty much mostly conventional. Like, he ran really well, and most of the cows gave heifers, so that was pretty nice. But so there's a lot of Morans in the calf barn right now. So heifers, I would say probably a good 10% are pulled. Cows, I got 3 or 4. I'll have a whole bunch, like, next year.
Because
Morand ran twice in our herd, so I ran them the first time. I ran 10 sacks through the heifers, just like the first 10 heifers. They get him, and then I can see the variability because...
He has calving ease?
Yeah, he's 104, but I actually started recording weights and sizes of calves, and he's actually on the bigger side of the calf sizes. But the one thing I noticed is out of the 22 calvings I had, only 2 went late.
Hmm.
So they'll be early, but they'll be big calves.
Yeah.
But I've only had... Out of the 22, I had 1 problem calving.
Yeah.
So that's not
Adam Morand.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your top 5 that you got?
Bulls in the tank?
Yeah.
I weigh more than 5.
You're a hoarder. There should be a hoarder's episode for dairy farmers.
Yeah, sometimes. Well, yeah, today. Oh,
there's worse people than Boss. I know.
I use a lot of Jacoby.
Okay.
Just the top lines he puts on the cows.
And extra money?
And the rumps. Pardon?
Extra money?
They're not extra money.
Jacoby is on the higher end.
They don't milk.
They don't milk?
Oh, I have some good ones that milk a ton. Like, I got some second lactations coming in that are giving 60 liters.
I wish.
So,
Yeah, you just, I kind of believe you, if you keep your cows healthy and you feed them right, they'll produce for you.
Yeah, of course. That's, yeah.
If you put them in a good environment, cow comfort.
Yeah.
Most of our herd is backed, like when my dad bought it, it was backed by a lot of milk.
Oh, okay.
So the farmer before us, he pushed milk a lot.
Yeah.
So if you go back long ways, there's a lot of milk in the family lines. So my Jacoby's milk just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else you got?
I got some King Duck today.
Okay.
So I'm excited about him. He combines type and production at the same time.
Yeah.
So I'm milking, actually, I used them before, I'm milking two of them, and they're two of my highest two-year-olds that are milking right now.
Are they scored?
One scored 83, the other one's not scored yet, but I think she'll be around that too.
Which one? Well, that's what Mike scored, 83, but she's 77 on the dairy strength. So.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that he... Well, like I used him for a strength bull, and she comes out 77 for the dairy strength. Otherwise, she would have been 86.
But. I think the King Docks, you kind of got to watch for feet and legs, but that's about it, I think, and maybe outer depth. But
which one?
The ones that we're milking, I really, really like. So a lot of times I do that. I'll use 10 to 20 doses of a bull that I think might be something, and then by the time they calve around, they're proven, and then I'll grab a bunch more of them if
right.
And that, I look at a lot of Art's cows too, if he uses the bull, and we both like the heifers coming in, and go back to
Jacoby's proven, right?
Jacoby's proven, Jacoby.
Yeah, for a year already, I think.
Yeah.
And that's his biggest knock, is like his production, but he's got some of the, like he's one of the highest like score improving bulls, like he'll improve almost everything on the cow, so.
He just makes them very square.
Okay, yeah.
But you do have to watch the size. They do get big if you let them. So
they get a lot bigger in the second lactation.
Yeah, they grow.
Yeah.
Huh.
So if they start off small, that's
the. Well, that's one I gotta remember. I like those big square cows with the wide pins and.
Yeah, he's also like weak on medium suspensory, so you gotta kind of watch that too.
What other ones you got?
What else am I using right now? Well, I use some Legend.
Who's that from?
Blondin.
From Blondin Sires. Right, yeah.
He's actually an Alberta bull. He's bred by Mossning Holsteins.
Oh, okay, yeah.
By Rimby. Yeah. And then Blondin bought the dam. She just went 89 as a three-year-old. And then,
that's max score.
Yeah.
So that's a bull I really like because they're not overly tall. I think he's 11 or something for type, or for stature, what was his name? I mean. Legend.
Blondin Legend.
Legend. Yeah. And he's got, I think his utter depth is 15 shallow or something.
Yeah, so something like that. He's a sidekick son. He's a little pricey though.
Yeah, I probably got him for cheap though. I'm good at that, so.
Kind of ripped Martin off there, hey?
Well,
what else you got?
That time I didn't get it from Martin.
So those are all proven? Did you say they're all proven?
Legend is not proven yet. He will be very close though, because he's been around for a while. From them, they're a smaller stud. I still consider them a specialty stud. They're more of the, like they fit a lot of my breeding, but a little bit less in the health trait side. But they have a lot of high type, like good deep cow family stuff that they lack in some. Their early bulls lacked in some health trait stuff, but. They're coming around now as they get more and more, but we'll see where they go. But they're a really small stud, really, really small, out of Quebec.
Huh.
What do they run, 15 bulls maybe?
Yeah, they just started a couple of years ago. Eh?
What about young sires? What about unproven bulls?
Genomic bulls. Because I only use, use young sires anymore in my mind. They're either genomic mold bulls or...
Enlighten me. What's the difference between young sire and genomic bull?
Same thing.
It's the same thing, but just the top end of the young sires.
Yeah. I guess. I don't know. Thing used to be like a big thing when they used to give credits to people that used the young sires and you'd get the money back when you'd score them. And right. Then, I don't know, what would you say, maybe 10 years ago, they kind of like... pulled back on that, and then
when genomics took off, then they would test the bulls, and if they didn't test high enough, they got rid of them right away, and they only kept the top ones. So now they charge a lot of money for a genomic sire because he's supposed to be good.
I like how you put that.
For the most part, they are pretty good. But
back in the day, he would have been $15.
You know, young
sire, and they'd give you 30 to classify him.
Yeah.
So you make $15.
They used to give you 150 if they tested 3 tests, and then they would pay your classification fee and pay for the classification. Back in the day, and now. You pay $75 for the bull, or 70 or 40 even, and you don't get any money back.
So, I don't think there's any young sires at 40, or genomic bulls at 40.
Well, whatever, right? So it used to be a little more lucrative to use young sires, but now it's genomic, and hopefully with genomics you're getting the better bulls.
I've kind of gone back to proving a little bit, in my breeding decisions, just because. It's more the reliability of it, and I find a lot of genomic bulls, they still change a lot in their numbers by the time they are proven.
Yeah. I do about, I think 2 out of the 5 are genomic.
So what genomic bulls are you using then?
Oh man, I couldn't even tell you. I couldn't tell you which ones are proven or which
Peter,
ones are.
Peter, you use Peter.
No, I'm done with him. I got...
he's good though.
I'm done with Rambo. I got... Oh, who do I have? I got Warrior Red. Excalibur,
Excalibur is, and Warrior would be your genomic sires.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Because neither one of them are proven. I think the Warriors would be yearlings, the oldest ones. But they're long, long.
Apple Crisp proven.
I like them. They are so good. His proof came out kind of as a big disappointment, but the heifers that I have, I think I have, there's 3 brothers, just Apple Crisp, Overwing, and Army.
Like a Tropic.
They're good. I like them. I have some of the oldest ones in Alberta. They're really, really good.
Man, I should have probably looked at that, all the bulls I'm using.
Yeah, I should have told us to make a list. Yeah. Bring the list.
I'm not into that side of things like completely yet. I'm still kind of busy shoveling shit, just doing random stuff on the farm.
You got all kinds of projects on the go.
Yeah, so... I'd like to be more into it because I think that's where I need to spend my time, to put more money in my pocket type of thing. I'm sure you probably know, there's lots of different stuff you need to do.
I can't remember the last time he looked at a proof sheet.
It's been a while. You guys have been taking care of the breeding program since you were 16 years old, so now you're 20. What are you, 20?
23.
So ever since they got their...
Well, we never used. I haven't picked bulls, or I didn't start picking bulls until I was 20. So, until I was like in college, and then I started to run the breeding program.
Yeah, but you guys were doing all the breeding since you were 16. So.
Yeah, he bred 3 cows this year.
Nice.
Yeah. And they were all on Sundays.
You got a longer arm.
If everybody else, they're all hungover.
They're all gone.
That's only Matt.
Yeah, he's
but
not
no,
here.
But no, like,
they were all
he's
gone.
Bred 3 cows. It was on a Sunday that we both had off, and we were not going to come in.
I went 66% because one repeated and the other 2 are pregnant. So
yeah.
I'm 66%. That's not bad.
Keep that. Stop right there.
Yeah, don't breed anymore.
Stop all your head.
You guys sell some genetics, right? You guys sell some heifers?
We haven't sold for a while because we've been, since I moved to this new place, we've been slowly expanding. And we're doing more of that now because I always had more quota than what I was milking, because when I was doing the milking, I was only going to milk 120 cows, and now we're at 140. So we're still room to go up a little bit more.
Right.
We don't want to milk more.
Well, we can milk about 145. I think that's where we need to be at.
To fill your quota.
To fill the quota. So when I was milking 120, we leased out a lot.
Yeah.
But I got knee replacement and hip replacement surgery, so I was kind of busted up, and the boys weren't quite home yet, so I wasn't going to milk any more cows. But now that they're home, they can go to work. So
yeah. The
quota was there, so now we're shipping more cows.
Now you got the barn.
Barn's there.
You got the room.
But you do sell some bulls.
We
breeding
sell
bulls, I guess, right?
Bulls, yeah.
Yeah, that's my job. I picked, like along with my breeding, my breeding philosophy is like I like to have something back the bull. So like if I'm gonna sell a bull, I don't want it out of a heifer that's not scored, and like I don't know what she's going to score. Right. I would rather have it from, like, an old proven cow.
Combine it with numbers and...
Exactly.
There's still enough guys out there. We got one guy that buys from us on a regular basis. He has robots. He comes in and he says, where's the mother? And so we show him the mother, and if he likes the teat placement on the dam and he prefers third, fourth, fifth lactation cows because then he knows what it's going to look like, he buys the bull. That's all he looks at because he's robots and he wants that. For him, that's very important. That's all he looks at.
Well, yeah. So, and because we DHI test everything, there's three lactations of production records behind.
So
great.
So it's pretty reliable. Like, this is what you're going to get.
Yeah. So he's they're focused on we want good uttered cows. So if you got a third, fourth lactation cow that still he feels will fit in the robot, then he buys the bull. And he comes for sure once a year. He buys two bulls a year. He usually comes to us once a year, but he's talking to coming twice a year because he likes, we sold him a couple of bulls now, and he likes the daughters that are coming. So as long as we stay away from the, different cow families and we don't send the same, a son
or
a brother in then it should work.
Yeah, so. But tell him that's just all, that's kind of going away. You can sell him sons, whatever.
Well,
guys these days don't care anyway. Like alligator, right? Inbreeding. Alligators.
Alligator's pretty inbred. The biggest one I can think of is Knox. It's like Cedarwall Knox.
Shout out to Cedarwall. Chilliwack.
He's pretty inbred. I'm not going to explain that one because I don't totally know that one. Pretty sure he is.
But they work, right? A lot of times, alligator, obviously.
Yeah, the numbers are there. And Dennis has said this many times, inbreeding only is a problem when it's a problem. Other than that, it's line breeding. If you get the genes that line up, chances are that animal won't be alive when it comes out if you get a mutant.
He's only saying that because he wants to sell that bull.
I used a little bit of them. I actually have a few calves, though. I think I have three heifers in the calf run right now by Knox, but... he's like a pretty high type bull. I have a third calf that just went 87. And she milks like crazy. Like she's doing 56 liters, 58 liters at like 4.45 fat. So we're pretty high fat herd. We're not the highest like liters per cow, but we ship like constantly 4.45 fat. So that's kind of been our focus since we're in a kind of a fat based system.
Yeah.
So you can make up your quota a little easier running high fat with less cows. And then you can get a little bit more, like, picky with what you cull and what you keep. And
yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you just do kgs per head per day or whatever.
Yeah, and I've never really been one to push the milk into cows because I know we can grow the quality forages to get that anyways. Like, my highest producers, I would tell you right now, would not be our highest genomic animals. Huh. So, like, genomic numbers are one thing, but if you can, they're exactly how you raise them. It's all down right from the calf, right all the way up to when they calve. So if you got a healthy calf, just like Boss said, they're going to milk.
Yeah.
And then they're going to grow to their environment no matter what their genetics are. So.
Yeah, that's true to some extent, I think.
To a point, right?
Yeah. I don't know how to end this because I think we could probably go on for days, but... thanks guys for coming on.
It's about three quarters.
Thanks for coming on, and you have Marylander Holsteins on Instagram.
Yep.
And you got
Decoy Holsteins on Facebook.
Okay, cool. Because you guys are selling heifers from time to time too, right?
Yeah, we sell some heifers, we sell some bulls, and they'll be on Facebook.
Cool.
So if you
and we didn't really dive into your genetics as much, but you got some pretty good cows, pretty that's good right. cow we, families there too. So
he has some very good cows there.
We'll have to have you back on, Bus. Thanks for coming on.
Maybe
and,
with Ard one day.
Yeah. I hope everyone has a happy new year, and I'll catch you all next week.
Thank you for listening to the Faraway Farm Boy podcast, episode number 19, with Tim and Mike Hummel and Boss Vanderkoy. If you're looking for other dairy farming podcasts, check out the Bowls, Beers, and Barn Talk podcast. Join me again next week.